ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
U.S. officials call for oversight on aid sent to Ukraine.
The very bipartisan attempt to get Ukraine what the U.S. could provide really overtook these kind of questions about, like, well, wait, where is it all going to go and what happens if it ends up in the wrong hands?
Plus, members of Congress push for new powers to block U.S. investments in China and why some European factories are closing as cheap Russian energy dries up. It's Tuesday, June 14th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We are exclusively reporting that bipartisan members of the U.S. Congress are pursuing legislation to limit certain U.S. investments abroad as a part of efforts to bolster U.S. competitiveness with China. According to congressional aides and a revised draft of the bill reviewed Monday by the Wall Street Journal, the measure would require American companies and investors to disclose certain new outbound investments and would authorize the executive branch to form a new interagency panel to review and block investments on national security grounds. The U.S.-China Business Council, which represents American companies doing business in China, criticized the concept, warning that such screenings risk generating uncertainty and harming U.S. competitiveness. Supporters of the measure, meanwhile, defend the screenings as targeted and necessary for economic and national security. Voters in South Carolina, Maine, Nevada, and North Dakota will head to the polls today to cast ballots in primary elections. Several races will again test the power of former President Donald Trump's endorsement, including in South Carolina's 7th Congressional District, where State Senator Russell Fry, a Trump-endorsed candidate, will face off against Representative Tom Rice, one of the 10 House members who voted to impeach Trump for his role on January 6, 2021. Turning to South Korea, a week-long trucker strike over fuel costs and wages is tying up supply chains in one of Asia's export powerhouses. Thousands of truckers are refusing to drive, while deliveries by truckers who are working have been thwarted by protesters. WSJ reporter Ji Young Son in the capital Seoul says the strike is shutting steel plants, disrupting car production, and delaying shipments of raw materials needed for semiconductors.
Since Korea is a major exporter of all these items, these areas are going to see longer lead times and some constraints in supply, especially if the strike is prolonged. That's all expected to add new constraints to the global supply chain that's remained weak since the days of the pandemic.
And Elon Musk is set to participate in an all-hands meeting with Twitter employees on Thursday, marking the first time the billionaire will have spoken directly to the social media company's workforce since he began his courtship of it in April. A spokesman said Twitter chief Parag Agrawal announced the meeting to staffers in an email on Monday. Uncertainty over the status of Musk's $44 billion bid to acquire Twitter has left employees bewildered about what their jobs are and will be. High energy prices have been causing financial headaches for European households since the start of Russia's war in Ukraine. But now European businesses, long dependent on cheap Russian energy, are feeling the pinch too, and a growing number are even being forced to cease operations. WSJ reporter Matthew Dalton has been tracking this story, and he joins us now from Paris. Matt, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Luke.
So, Matt, how is European industry being affected by these high energy costs?
Well, natural gas prices in Europe are around three times as high as they are in the US right now. So that means that European producers of products that rely and require a lot of natural gas to produce are competing with American producers that can produce at a much lower cost and therefore undercut European producers. You're seeing a very good example of that in the fertilizer industry, which is highly dependent on natural gas. American producers can export ammonia, which is the key ingredient of fertilizer and is made with natural gas, to Europe at a much lower price than Europeans can now produce it. So you've had a company that, like CF Industries, which is the UK's largest manufacturer of fertilizer, that has had to shut down because of high natural gas prices. And in addition to that, natural gas supplies a big chunk of Europe's electricity, and it often sets the price of electricity in European markets. So when you put all these things together, a lot of these companies like fertilizer manufacturers, chemical makers, steel makers have been under a lot of pressure, and some have had to shut down.
And is Europe looking to find alternative supplies now?
Well, already companies are importing certain energy-intensive products from outside Europe rather than make them inside Europe. So a lot of companies are importing ammonia, for example, instead of making them in Europe because the economics just don't make sense anymore. Then there are sort of the longer-term efforts to find other suppliers of gas. So, for example, bringing in liquefied natural gas from the U.S. to power industry and power electricity grids. And then there are efforts to try and find ways to produce without using fossil fuels at all. The problem is Europe needs them very quickly, and these are not going to be available for a number of years.
And what are the long-term consequences to European industry as a result of these plant shutdowns?
Well, the longer-term impact here is Europe's loss of industrial competitiveness. So if you don't have access to affordable energy, your industrial base is at risk of withering. You know, we've already seen the first signs of it, but Europe importing more energy-intensive goods rather than making them in Europe, and that would be bad for the European economy long-term.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton. Matt, thank you for the update.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, as the U.S. continues to send roughly $130 million in aid to Ukraine per day, calls are mounting to subject that assistance to greater oversight. We'll have that story after the break.
Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Since January, the U.S. Congress has appropriated $54 billion in assistance to Ukraine. According to officials, that dwarfs annual U.S. aid to any other country, including assistance sent to Afghanistan at the height of the U.S. military's involvement there. And while that aid has enjoyed strong bipartisan support, current and former U.S. officials are warning that more must be done to ensure that arms and money intended for Ukraine aren't diverted, stolen, or misused. WSJ White House and national security reporter Gordon Lubold has been following this story, and he joins us now with more. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. So tell us about these calls for oversight of money going to Ukraine. What are officials telling you? Are they alleging that aid that has been provided to Ukraine has already been misused?
No. And it's important to note that they are not suggesting that there's been no indication of anything happening. And to be clear, President Zelensky is credited with doing a very good job of bringing the country together, bringing the military together, and fighting off Russian aggression thus far. And that has had its own galvanizing effect on the country. And so any kind of structural problems with the government from a corruption standpoint may be shifted aside. But I think people who have looked at this in and out of government in general, in other places, particularly Afghanistan, say, you know, it's a matter of time before some of this weaponry gets skimmed off the top or goes somewhere else. And again, there's no evidence of that, but it's just the sheer volume and speed at which it's going into the country that raises questions.
So there are calls to do more to track this money, I take it. Are there examples of the type of aid oversight that is being called for here?
Yeah, I think one of the more recent rounds of support includes money for the State Department Inspector General, the Pentagon's Inspector General, to conduct some oversight. And there's USAID in there as well, to conduct some oversight of all this support. But it's important to note that the U.S. does not have any American military personnel inside Ukraine. So it's that much harder to try to do that. So there are some small efforts included in these bills to try to get their hands around it. But it's pretty hard when you're limited to being outside of the country as opposed to inside.
And Gordon, tell us about the U.S. history in Afghanistan and how it might suggest a possible model for accountability of this aid were it to be followed.
Sure. What it is known as the SIGAR, which is a Special Inspector General for Afghanistan, now led by a guy named John Sopko, which was, to be clear, was created 9 years after the U.S. first went into Afghanistan in 2001. So it did take a long time for that effort to get underway. It was a formal program and a formal mechanism to investigate waste, fraud, and abuse. But I think certainly Mr. Sopko and others would like some kind of formal mechanism like that to be in place sooner rather than later in Ukraine in order to monitor some of this weaponry. I mean, it's important also to note that if Ukraine were to lose this fight in the Donbas in the east to Russia, it's very possible that Russia gets its hands on some of the best weaponry the U.S. has to offer and other countries. And so that's not the only fear. I think that there's just the fear of militia groups or just the black market able to get its hands somehow on this supply chain of weaponry and taking it for itself.
And finally, Gordon, what is the likelihood safeguards like the ones you've described, the creation of a special inspector general like the one for Afghanistan reconstruction, could actually be put in place for Ukraine now?
Well, I think that they're limited because of the amount of American resources, investigative or oversight resources that are inside the country, because there aren't any. But if they were to create some mechanism now, they could start to get their hands on some of this stuff. Now, it's important to know that some technology exists and there are other ways to monitor this without being inside the country. But without it, without a real clear idea of where it's going and how it could be used, if it fell into the wrong hands, you're just kind of flying blind. Now, it's also just, I would note that at some point, the U.S. has reopened its embassy in Kyiv. At some point, that embassy may become a repository for a number of American personnel who could begin to do this oversight. So some structure could be in place sooner rather than later, but there's no indication of that happening just yet.
That was Wall Street Journal White House and National Security reporter Gordon Leubold. Gordon, thanks for the update.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, whose TikTok hashtag has racked up more than 26 million views despite their rise to fame coming some 100 years ago? The answer is mystery writer Agatha Christie, whose fictional whodunits, often solved by an elderly British lady or a fussy Belgian detective, have soared in popularity among younger generations. That is after two recent Hollywood adaptations of her books, Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile. WSJ reporter Lillian Rizzo explains Christie's newfound appeal.
Younger people are just devouring, especially the characters that have a series of books like Detective Poirot, and really enjoying the way they figure it out. And some even said, watching these movies or reading these books really helped me figure out like what's going to happen next in, say, a Marvel movie or something. And people are posting on Instagram or TikTok, and they use the Agatha Christie hashtag to show off when they've read her book. So I guess there's more book readers out there than we thought. And they're all reading them in the physical form, too. And it's kind of funny to see an Agatha Christie book as a young person's beach read, but it's happening.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.